You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
It's Friday, 2nd of August. U.S. unemployment data due 2:30. Unemployment rate expected unchanged at 4.1%. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from the MoneyWeb Global Headquarters in Johannesburg, South Africa. On the show today, Jimmy Moyaha. We've got the Bureau of Economic Research saying we can do 2.2% GDP next year. And then good results from MTN Ghana. But I mean, there's T's and C's there, like a 20% inflation rate in a currency that's lost a third. Ready made for Mark, Head of Systematic Solutions at Stanlib. Different equity investment strategies and thoughts from me on Powell and his statements on Wednesday evening. When do those rate cuts arrive? We've got dates. The show is brought to you by Stanlib. Visit stanlib.com to get in touch with one of their investment specialists. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. Morning headlines from MoneyWeb: saving for retirement in South Africa, four tips to navigate the new pension rules, that by Adrian Seville. And Business Day: Durban port issues and bad reputation hamper local tourism as business diverts to Maputo. Southern Sun reports surge in business tourism at its hotels in the Mozambican capital. Morning markets, US was red. S&P down 1.4%, NASDAQ down 2.4%. The Easter's red. Sydney off a third of a percent, Tokyo down 4.9%. Hong Kong off 2%, Tencent down 1.3%. Commodities mostly red. The exception is gold, $2,502, all-time high there. Everything else down: Brent 80.27, platinum 9.76, palladium 8.99, Rand is 18.26, Bitcoin 64,400. Top 40 opening call, 160 points to the red. That's about 0.2% to the down.
MoneyWeb Now on the money. Also available on podcast.
Chatting now with Jimmy Moyaha, independent analyst. Jimmy, appreciate the early morning time. As I mentioned in the intro there, the Bureau of Economic Research saying that South Africa can do a 2.2% GDP next year. Aside from the COVID bounce back, that will be the highest in about a decade. We also had local PMI bouncing strongly back above 50. My sense is a lot of this is lack of load shedding, but certainly, I mean, some proper positivity coming through. We were kind of hoping for it post the coalition government, but we're seeing it in real time here.
Yeah, morning, Simon. It's wonderful what happens when we have electricity. We've discussed this before. To say the fact that we are where we are is a very different sign. I mean, we have to take into account the factors that have been around in the past that are now looking different now. The load shedding one, as a single example. We've had load shedding for 16 years, and now suddenly we haven't had load shedding for more than 100 consecutive days. Now, that obviously is a change in the scenario and a change in the situation. We're also seeing, from what Fed Chair Jerome Powell said, and you'll get into that a little later on, around when we can expect interest rate cuts to start happening. The Bureau for Economic Research would then look at that data. They'd also look at the South African picture and say we could also see tailwinds from our own interest rate cuts coming to the fold. So it looks like it's that perfect storm coming together of all these factors that could suddenly start to bode well for economic growth. But there's a very important economic term, and I remember this from my high school days. It's a Latin term, ceteris paribus, meaning all things remaining equal, which suggests that we need the situations to remain as positive as they are or better, and not go back to the last 5 years that we've had in terms of performance. If that is to prevail, then there is optimism, and that's what the data is based on, right? That's what institutions like the BER, like the World Bank, all base their forecasts on, is what is the current situation, what are the potential tailwinds or pitfalls, but more importantly, if things remain as stable as possible going into next year, what does that look like?
Yeah, I take your point. And 129 days of no load shedding. I just ran the math. That's since March 26. Let's move to MTN. They've got their three big markets, is Nigeria, South Africa, Ghana. They had Ghana results out yesterday. On the surface, the numbers look really good. You know, great growth, great everything. Except, I mean, inflation has halved to 22%. We've still got the Ghanaian currency has lost about a third over the last year. Good numbers, but they're running into troubles with their other African markets where currency weakness is just evaporating any profits that they repatriate back to South Africa.
Absolutely. The Nigeria picture especially, I mean, Nigeria is twofold. It's the devaluation of the Naira that's taken place alongside that massive tax bill. And that's really what's kept the MTN share price under that much pressure because the market share that they have in Nigeria is so big. Ghana, again, another huge demographic for them. And when we get MTN data, we typically get them over a couple of days, and we usually get Nigeria first, Ghana second, South Africa, and the group last. So when they merge that data into that final consolidated report that they give us through the SENS, you start to then see the impact of those geographical regions. MTN went on a big drive ahead of a competitor like Vodacom into the African continent, and they faced some of those headwinds a long time before Vodacom went and acquired the Egyptian business that they acquired recently. So they've been at this for quite some time, and even through this, the business has been able to weather some of the storms. They're still continuing to grow the subscriber base, and I remember recently they went through a bit of a challenge with I think it was the Ghana business, where some of their they had to do a switch over for regulatory purposes on SIM cards, and some clients had to be disconnected because they didn't migrate over effectively, and that caused a bit of a stir. Clients were unhappy. They had to close down some stores, and obviously, these sorts of challenges for a business like MTN are never a good thing. But when you have a business that operates so heavily in these African regions and is understanding of the markets that they operate in, you often find that the company's able to sort of navigate some of these waters a little better than what you'd expect. And that's evident in the share price. We did see the share price reach a new low in terms of having broken. I think that the previous kind of low levels around 80 Rand. We got as low as 74 Rand last month, but we're sort of back around the 78, 80 Rand level. I think if we start to get a better indication of them being able to manage all of these challenges, then you might see the share price start to improve. But to the point, or to the credit of the MTN team, the challenges they're facing are not challenges internal to the business. It's external environment. There's very little you can do about it. I mean, in fact, in terms of currency devaluations and currency fluctuations, there's absolutely nothing they can do about it because it's not their currency to determine, right? So they have to put in place whatever systems they can as best as possible, or do what they did in some of the Middle Eastern regions and pull out of the region entirely, which I don't think is part of MTN's roadmap at this stage. So I think from their perspective, they're saying, look, these are tailwinds, or these are difficult times we have to contend with. But if they get through the other side of this, I mean, it's a very easy conversation to see the share price going back to 100 Rand.
I take your point. They're managing what they can. I suppose much like a mining executive, you can't control the currency. You can hedge, but hedges, you know, they cost money and at some point they run out. That's Jimmy Moyaha, independent analyst. Always appreciate the early morning. And our question today on LinkedIn and Twitter is that 2.2% that the Bureau for Economic Research is predicting. Do you think we can achieve it? If load shedding stays gone, I mean, maybe it's easy. Perhaps we could do even more, or not likely. Have your vote, have your say, LinkedIn and Twitter.
Your money knows that reaching new heights means turbulence. But what if you don't have to feel it? Our partnership with JP Morgan Asset Management gives you access to a broad range of global strategies. So when you invest in StanLib's Global Multi-Strategy Diversified Growth Fund, your money can withstand the ups and downs caused by market fluctuations. Seek more returns at stanlib.com/more. StanLib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
I'm chatting with Radomator for Mark, Head of Systematic Solutions, Stanlib. Radomator, appreciate the time today. Equity investing. I think when I say equity investing, folks are, yeah, we know what that is. But there are different strategies and methodologies that can be used in the process. Can you give us some examples of those?
Hi, Simon. Yes, and thank you for having me. Simon, so I think what is really interesting is I was watching the Olympics last night.
Yeah.
The one sport that really attracts me, it's just so beautiful and medieval, is the sport of fencing.
Yeah.
And as I watched these two fencers, I could see the different strategies applied by the two competitors. And the one was certainly very active, very aggressive, and very attacking. And the other adopted a very passive strategy, sort of stepping back and waiting for the other to attack. And I think there's a very nice analogy there to be used to the world and to be applied to the world of equity investing. So I think the biggest divisor in the world of equity investing is exactly that. So the first is distinguishing between active investing and passive investing.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe just to elaborate a little bit on what passive is, it is when the weight of the stock in the portfolio is weighted by its value. So the biggest stocks tend to bigger weighting in the portfolio. And maybe by using an example, if you talk about Naspers, if you look at the number of shares of Naspers available on the JSE, and you multiply that by the price of the shares, you get to the market cap of Naspers. And if that is around about 10% of the total value of the stocks trading on the all share, it means that in a passive fund, the weight of Naspers would be 10%. Now, examples of such passive funds is like, well, passive benchmarks is the top 40 or the all share. And importantly, these passive funds typically also serve as the benchmark for active funds. Now, that brings me to active funds. And what active means is that the weight of the stock in the portfolio moves away from that of the benchmark. So, for example, if Naspers was 10% in the benchmark and a fund manager holds a 12% position, that gives you an active weight of 2%. Now, within the world of active investing, there are two ways of investing actively. The one is what I like to call the discretionary way or the old traditional way or the way of the accountants. The other is the new way, the systematic way, or what I like to call the way of the engineers. And so before I elaborate on the differences between the two active strategies of the accountants versus the engineers, I want to highlight that I'm not saying that the one is better.
Yeah.
They are just different, and that is actually why they combine really well.
I take your point, and I particularly like the fencing analogy. I was also watching, and what struck me as well is that the big guy doesn't always win, and that really triggered to me. There are different ways of tackling the same problem, in a sense. But I cut you off. I think you were going to head to the sort of information being used.
Yes, exactly. So I wanted to talk about the way that the accountants and the engineers use these strategies. So discretionary portfolio managers or accountants make these investment decisions, and they do not necessarily follow a particular theory or rationale. If they did, they would be systematic or engineering portfolio mm-hmm. managers. So they tend to consume raw news and deeply analyze financial statements, but mostly rely on their judgment or intuition. They tend to focus on the edge cases, for example, anomalies in the financial statements, or trying to forecast whether the Fed is going to cut rates and which stocks will outperform should this occur. The systematic way, the way of the engineers, is much more process-orientated.
Yeah.
They tend to use their fundamental insights and market experience to identify lasting, long-term relationships in the market that drive stock returns. And they use technology on the same fundamental data sets that the accountants use, but they design a rational process that can be implemented in a repeatable way, like a production line.
I got you. And the one thing that stands out, and again, if we go to fencing, you know, fencing's everyone's got the same equipment, but they're using it different. And there's a sort of an investment nuclear arms race to get insights from. We all have the same data, but it's how we then use it and what we do with it.
Exactly. I couldn't agree more. That is an important point you're making, because at the foundation of any insight lies data. And the really interesting thing about the underlying data that is used by both the accountants and the engineers is that it's for the most part the same. They both use company financial statements, balance sheets and income statements, stock prices and the news. It is just applied in either a more or less structured way. So at Stanlib, for example, we use this data to try to find companies that are profitable with good growth prospects, and we try to buy these at attractive valuations and therefore build a portfolio that is rationally and fundamentally better than the benchmark. But I think given the amount of data available in the world today, I would say that we are in an investment nuclear arms race to extract the most insights from the data.
Yeah, and that is the challenge. And your process at Stanlib, I mean, is it an accountant's process? Is it an engineer's process to make decisions? What is the process you and your colleagues have at Stanlib?
So at Stanlib, we have a systematic process. So we follow the way of the engineers. And what we do is we are firm believers that the best performing stocks are those that are genuinely profitable, that generate cash earnings, have good growth prospects, and that one can buy at decent valuations. We just apply our technology and our production line to consistently and rationally build a portfolio that is fundamentally better than the benchmark. And that has stood us in good stead in terms of our performance.
Because that was going to be my next question. I mean, you've got the process there. And one of the things with investing is that there is the performance that measures us. And I'm imagining that performance indicates that the process works for you.
Absolutely. So if you look at our short-term performance over a one-year period to the end of June, we have actually generated alpha, so our performance over the benchmark of 5.5%. And over the medium term of 3 years, we've generated 3% of annualized outperformance. So that's every year we outperform the benchmark by 3%. And that number holds since inception as well. So quite a consistent outperformance that we've managed to generate using our fundamental insights applied in a rational and systematic way.
And at the heart of investing, if we're not outperforming, generating that alpha, I mean, with respect to those who don't, we should quit and just buy the index and go passive, because then at least we're not going to get negative alpha.
Well, I wouldn't necessarily agree with that. So I think that what is important is the relative price you pay for the active risk that the fund manager is taking. So we would want our accountants, so the accounting portfolio managers, to build high conviction, highly concentrated portfolios that truly embody their best ideas. If that performance, they are certainly entitled to charge a higher fee on that. Mm-hmm. In terms of the systematic approach to active investing, you know, the amount of insights and intellectual property that goes into the design of such a process certainly results in significant active bets versus the benchmark, and that outperforms as well. And there's a negative correlation between these two different strategies of active investing that actually complements each other quite well. I'm not saying that there isn't space for an index holding as well as a core, but it's important that you pay for the amount of active risk that the fund manager takes.
I like that point. And it is understanding that process. And it goes back to the building blocks of an overall portfolio. We'll leave it there. That's Radomir from Mark. He's head of Systematic Solutions. Stanlib, appreciate the time.
Your money gives a damn. If it could protest and sign petitions, your money would. But your money can do more than that. When you invest in Stanlib's infrastructure investment fund, beyond getting solid returns, you are helping to build a more sustainable future through job creation and positive economic growth. Damn right you are. Invest for more impact at stanlib.com/more. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider.
MoneyWeb now. On the money.
So we had the FOMC on Wednesday evening. Rates in the US left unchanged. But the press conference from Jerome Powell is always the more important point. And he said, and I quote, policy rate could be on the table as soon as the next meeting in September. That's the meeting 17, 18 September. There's then a November and a December one. But the short answer is it looks like 17, 18 July in the FOMC, we will get that rate cut. We're going to be watching unemployment data. It's 4.1 unemployment rate. If we see that sort of staying where it is, or perhaps even weakening a little bit, that'll help with that theory. And of course, just general inflation data. Does that keep coming down? If they then cut 18 September, then MPC is the next day, 19 September. I think let's put those in your calendar. I think we're going to start getting rate cuts. Fairly looks all right. What we need to know, we'll find out on the day, is it 0.25% or 0.5%? I think our MPC, being cautious, will only give us 0.25%. That's it for today. We were chatting with Skulk Low yesterday. Top 40 on Wednesday closed at all-time highs. We came down yesterday, but we still got that all-time high. The question we asked on LinkedIn and Twitter, can we move higher from here? Just over half said yes, onwards and upwards. A third said yep, but slowly. The rest said no, we go down from here. Have your vote, have your say, LinkedIn and Twitter. The show is brought to you by Stanlib. visit stanlib.com to get in touch with one of their investment specialists. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. We're live every weekday morning. The MoneyWeb website's in the app, 6:30 a.m. podcast just after 7. Thanks to my team, Eddie, Nobokhle, Nicole, to you for listening, my guests for their time. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. We've been nominated for an award. If you're keen to vote for us as best podcast in the world, or the African continent, head to moneyweb.co.za, navigate your way to the MoneyWeb Now page. You'll see the link with all the details. We'll chat again Monday. Life insurance.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now, on the money.